Hey everybody, it's the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and you are watching the Weekly Ringer series here on clanofthegreywolf.com. Lots to talk about today, following up from a question last week that stirred a little bit of a controversy, which is always great here on the Weekly Ringer. Those weeks that people start to kind of get back and get that back and forth going seem to be some of the weeks with the best questions. So that lets me know I'm doing my job and kind of stirring things up, which is great. That being said, it was a little bit ancillary from the question last week, which is fine, but that's okay. We'll cover all of those topics and more as I review last week's question that has to do with the PS4 announcement before the PS4 announcement was made. And let me tell you, because I'd love to tell you that the PS4 announcement made a lot of difference in this question, but it really didn't because it didn't clear very much up. In any case, we're going to do, as we always do here in the Weekly Ringer, I'm going to review last week's question, give you some of my own thoughts on the matter, and then we'll ask a question for next week that actually comes from the community. I always like to reach out to you guys about ways to connect, and several of you do send in questions, and when I see something that I like, I write them down, I put them in a pile, and then when I need another question to ask, I always go straight to it. So, this week we're going to have a user-contributed question that I think we'll have us all thinking about some of our favorite video game worlds that there are out there. And what better way to kind of talk to each other on a video game website than about video game worlds? That's just how I think about it. In any case, as I like to do as well, I like to begin the conversation with welcoming new folks to the community that are new commenters. So remember, comments are what keep the show going. So as a result, a lot of times I like to just thank people that are brand new to the community that have stepped up to make comments. This week, now folks, remember something, I am doing this completely by memory, and I've been doing this for over 2 years now. So if you've commented before and I welcome you again, just take the welcome, because I'm just kind of going by what I remember. I don't actually have like a list somewhere of like everyone that's ever commented on a Weekly Ringer. Maybe I should put that database together at some point. That could be fun to look at. But in any case, I'm just doing this out of sheer memory at this point. So I'm welcoming new members, Legion, welcome to you, Askew Taboo, and High Elven Gamer. Now, I'm not sure if I've actually welcomed any of you before, but if I have not, then welcome to you. Maybe I should cut the whole welcoming thing because I just can't remember anymore. That's a good sign, though. That means the show has been doing that well for this long. You know, it's not a bad thing. In any case, the other thing is that a lot of things have been happening in my own life. Been going through a lot of, not necessarily changes, but very, very, very busy lately, which is why I didn't get to the question that I thought was so good a little bit sooner. So I apologize for that, but you know, this is the way that it goes sometimes. You got to kind of play victim to your own life in many ways. You can't kind of go in there and make videos as often as you'd want to. All right, I'm going to stop stalling now, and I'm going to get to the question that I asked you guys from last week, which was about the PlayStation 4, because there was an announcement, or I'm sorry, there was a rumor before the PlayStation 4 announcement of last week. There was an announcement that said that there would be PlayStation 3 games would be streamed to the PS4. That led me to kind of ask a question that forked in a couple different directions, really. But it led me to ask about both the streaming capabilities of PS3 and the backwards compatibility of PlayStation, you know, previous PlayStation iterations on the PS4. And if that would make you more or less likely to purchase a PS4 at launch or even really kind of in general. You guys had a lot to say about this that really went into a lot of different conversations, all of them very good, and I think conversations I could easily extend to their own Weekly Ringer questions because they were so good, and I think there were so many kind of other topics that came up around it. But as I do now as well, I'm going to go through some of, I think, the currents that ran through the arguments in general. We'll talk a little bit about those before I get into specific comments that you guys made. First of all, there was a question I think that ran through, was you know, a couple different, I guess, dichotomies that were presented throughout the conversation. One is digital, the nature of digital versus physical, and what that means for video gaming specifically. Do you like, you know, one thing is that several people seemed very hesitant And if I'm being completely honest, I'm one of those people hesitant to kind of fully embrace the digital revolution in video gaming or in music or in movies. You know, I kind of like movies. I've been a little bit easier. I don't know why it's easier for me to move into the digital space of movies. You know, I'm to the point now where I actually watch digital movies of games even when I have a DVD of it. Maybe that makes me crazy, but I don't actually buy those movies, so maybe that's a different story. But I pay for it, so, you know, paying for a Netflix service is different than actually buying the movies. I realize that. But in any case, in music, it's the same way. I still hesitate to buy just a digital copy of a CD, or I'm sorry, of an album, even though, you know, I might like to buy a CD or something like that. That's a challenge. I have been hesitant to embrace the full digital revolution there, and I don't hesitate to say that. Several of you said that, but the other thing is the nature of digital versus physical in the video game world probably looks a little bit different than it does in other media, because even when you have a service like Good Old Games, for example, or when you have a service like Steam, what you're doing is you're basically taking the entirety of a game, pulling it down to some kind of physical medium, be it a hard drive or a flash drive or something, and then playing that game emulated or playing it in actual hardware by virtue of actually having that whole game. You know, that's an interesting question, and one that I think should be answered as a part of this as well. You guys had several things to say about that, but I'm gonna move on to other things that we're going through this argument. Consumer rights, so being kind of a consumer in the video game industry, versus being maybe a collector, someone that collects for fun, right? And the differences between those things. So, you know, maybe I feel like I want to have a physical copy because of the fact that I want something physical to buy from a video game company. Versus somebody that's like a collector that just wants to have something because it is physically created. And what happens to collectors once the kind of digital revolution fully takes over? And we don't have physical copies of things. Also a great question. What I think that also brings up is the notion of archival purposes, right? We've talked about this several times, the importance of archiving video games of the past. Which in many ways I think is what we were really actually arguing about during the course of the conversation this time. And I think it was, you know, something that's not easily answered, let's say. So another thing, you know, it brought up the idea of emulation as a concept, which I think is lost on a few of us out there, so, you know, we can clear that up. But in any case, emulation is something that is a necessary part of software in the 21st century. It's just what happens everywhere. Emulation is, and I want to say this too, right? What emulation doesn't mean piracy, guys, right? I just want to throw that notion out there. It doesn't mean piracy. You know, Sony had Bleem, for example, which was their answer. I know Bleem wasn't part of Sony, but Sony licensed Bleem as a way to emulate PSX games on the PC. It's not illegal. You could put your own PlayStation games in, and you know, as long as you had a legal copy of a PlayStation game, you were perfectly entitled to play that game on PC via emulation. But that concept definitely ran through all of the arguments, I think, that we were making during the course of the week. So I wanted to mention that as well. Now let me get into some of the comments that you guys made specifically about this topic. Red Mage got us kicking by talking about backwards compatibility by virtue of being a streaming service is pretty much awful is the only way to do it, right? Because it's going to cost money. There's going to be a lot of other, you know, costs and features that probably aren't going to be associated with that. And at the end of the day, if your only way to play old games, PS3 back, PlayStation games, and I don't mean games that were played on Atari, I mean games that you bought specifically for PlayStation systems, if the only way to play those is via streaming, and there is no kind of proof of purchase thing, which is almost would be almost ridiculous or unheard of at this point, basically inaccomplishable, it's going to be a tough sell for a lot of people. And I think that's just probably the nature of the game as well. You know, other systems, other things are a completely different story. A virtual console concept is different. You know, playing an Atari 2600 game or playing, you know, an NES game, which will never happen, on a PS4 is a different concept than playing, you know, Twisted Metal 2, right, which is a PlayStation game. If that's the only option, Red Mage's point is, then it's probably not going to do very well. I tend to agree. And I think it does little in many ways to add to the attractiveness of the system, which I think is what Sony's trying to do. Sony's trying to say, hey, all you PS3 guys out there, now we got this PS4, although still, to the announcement, nobody's seen any of what this hardware even looks like. So what have they really announced? Nothing, really. But the fact is, they need a compelling reason. They need to provide you with a compelling reason to say, you have a PS3, you want a PS4, here's why you should get it. Here's why you should want it. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure they've made that very compelling through being able to stream PS3 games. Or even, although they haven't really talked about this, the one thing they have said is that you can't directly play PS3 games in a PS4. They've kind of skirted the idea of playing other PlayStation games in a PS4. So they haven't out and out denied it, but they've said there aren't any plans to do that. God only knows what that means, right? And playing PS2 and PS1 games over a kind of Gaikai-enabled network, which is what's, you know, PlayStation 4 basically made the announcement they're going to enable, which is not a surprise considering they just bought the company, is the capability to actually stream games that are less taxing onto your PS4 without having to download the entire game. So, and there's interesting questions that arise there too that I don't even want, it's not even pertinent to the conversation, but there are some really, really interesting questions that come out of that idea. I'm not even sure they could pull that off, to be honest, and several of you talked about that. How the hell is this even going to work? I don't know. I'm not sure they know, which is why they're being so freaking vague about it. But it's not really working for me, I gotta tell you. Mr. K talked about this concept really driving him to be a less likely consumer of a PS4, if you can believe that, because of the lack of physical ownership that's involved. And the idea is simply this. If you go to the store, or even if you buy something on Amazon or whatever the case might be, it's not even the nature of playing it necessarily. That's great. We all love to play video games. It's why we're here. But we all also like to get something. We like to have it. Now, this is why I bring this up, why I think Mr. K's point is very good, because there was a good argument going on kind of about how that works. And forget all the concepts of bit rot and all these things, you know, the discs will be gone. Forget all that for a second. It's all true, but forget that for a second. Almost all of us here at the Clan of the Grey Wolf, we have grown up with physical copies of a video game that we wanted to play, be it a Super Nintendo cartridge, be it a PlayStation CD, be it an Xbox 360 game, right? With the, you know, with exceptions of only folks that are a little bit younger, we grew up in an era where the only way to play video games was to buy them and then play them. You had a box, you brought it home, you open the box up, you put the whatever in the whatever, and you play it. We grew up in that era, so we're probably biased toward that kind of playing. And I think that's completely justified. If I buy something, I want to have it with me. Mr. K makes that same point. But I think it's very possible that a newer generation is going to come along that is not used to, or is not accustomed to that fact, or isn't married to it, let's say. And I think at that point, it becomes less of a consumer rights issue, and it becomes more of a successful implementation question. If I can buy a game, and I'm going to get to one of the examples of this. Actually, I'll talk about it right now. Sonic Rose asked about the idea of if I bought a game on PS2, why can't I play it on a PS4? You know, regardless of what happens to my physical copy. And I think that's an interesting point, right? So why can't that happen? Why isn't it that if I spent the money and funded previous PlayStation iterations, why can't I then play it? You know, if I have that disc and I can have that disc verified, you know, maybe I send it into Sony even, or whatever the case might be. I haven't thought it all the way through, guys. I don't know. I'm just saying that if there was a way to verify that you actually did have a disc, why couldn't I play that on a PS4? I own the game. Now, that brings up another interesting question, which is what I think their job should be then is to make enhanced content for those games and not just allow you to play that game itself. Now, if you want to just play the plain game, that's fine. Play it as it was in 1996 when you bought X. But if they make premium content for it, now you give me a reason to spend some money. Maybe there's an HD version, like the Halo HD. I think that's a great concept. That's something I really, really like and would love to see. So, I have so much sympathy for the position that Mr. K has about having a physical game. That's the way I feel. I think that's the way most of us feel. But I bet if you didn't grow up in an era where you had to bring home physical copies of games, I think you'd be a lot less likely to do so. In an era of casual games, downloadable games, in a world of virtual console and the like, I think those folks, as they come through and they become gamers, are going to be much, much less likely to have that same kind of compelling reason to buy these games, which brings up all kinds of archival questions and so on and so forth, and ownership and digital licenses and DRM and all that other kind of crap. This isn't about that, but I do completely understand Mr. K's point. The Bowtie Guy mentioned the idea of really the good old games kind of model instead of a streaming model, which I think is really the question at hand, right? And I think most of us would probably agree with that premise. You know, think about what's going... I think someone mentioned the idea of being able to download Daggerfall from Bethesda for free right now. Bethesda says, look, we're not going to make any more money off of Daggerfall. In many ways, the concept is outdated and no one's really going to want to plug this thing in. But we want to share this game that was really a great work of art and allow anybody that has nostalgia and can't find a copy or whatever the case might be to be able to go download it for free and play it. What a cool concept, right? Now, Good Old Games does that every once in a while, but what they really do is they purchase licenses for games that really aren't marketable for most people anymore, and they kind of fulfill that niche. Well, you know, I'd love to go play, and they take care of compatibility issues and so on and so forth. So if I have a PC and I want to play a game that's not even playable on PC anymore, I can go download this game that's old that they bought the licenses for and then they've made exclusively, or made it possible to play on the PC. I can download it and play it. What a great concept. Couldn't agree more with the Bowtie Guy in that regard on that one. And I don't know, in many ways. Well, I do know, and the fact is the matter is money. But in concept, I don't know why the PS4 can't do something like this. Except to say that that they really do this kind of thing through that virtual console concept, where they say, hey, remember these old games that, you know, I mean, Nintendo, right? Remember this game you used to play on your NES? Well, now you can play it on your Wii U and just buy it again, right? The buy it again process for me is not nearly as good as, you know, them kind of adding new features to it or making it look nicer or whatever. But that being said, I do understand the good old games concept, and I do prefer that a lot to streaming. But at the end of the day, I think streaming is probably a little bit more of an inevitability. Cloud gaming, you download something, you put it onto the cloud, now it's mine, and I can stream it to whatever screen I have, even if I have the appropriate throughput in my connection, my appropriate bandwidth in my connection. No question. That's probably going to happen no matter what. Mog says he's more interested in PS2 than PS3. I think that's probably true, and that's why I asked that question, why I wanted to get people to kind of think up a little bit more about what kind of games they'd like to play. If they were going to make the compelling reason to go to a PS4, well, I'd like to play those PS2 games. You and me both, brother. And as a matter of fact, if you can even take the PS1, that would be more compelling to me than anything. If I could play PS1 and PS2 games natively in a PS4, sign me up. I'm in. That being said, I'm not sure they can do that. I don't know how they can verify the nature of PlayStation black discs or PS2 purple discs or whatever the hell they were. I don't really even remember at this point. The point is, I don't know how you would make that verification nowadays on a PS4 simply because I'm ignorant of how they do it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying I don't know it. I don't know anything about that. But if they could do that, that would be awesome. I'd love to be able to go to the store, pick up a PS1 disc, and play it in a PS4. That, to me, would be an ultimately compelling reason to buy a PS4, and something I would very strongly consider. I have a lot of PS1 games kind of hanging around, right? I'd love to be able to pop those into a PS4 whenever I felt nostalgic and just play them. Maybe I didn't get the full experience, maybe I wasn't, you know, maybe they weren't very pretty or whatever, but I could at least play them on a PlayStation system. Why can't I do that? I get that they want to cut down on piracy, but folks, The fact of the matter is, it's very simple to go get images for any of these games anywhere, so what are you really missing out on? I just don't understand that. But if they could do that, that PS2... I'm with Mog. You get me a couple PS2, little PS2 action on this, I'm considering it. PS3, take it or leave it. I could care less. I'm not really interested in playing PS3 games on a PS4. If they didn't sell well on the PS4, then why the hell should they sell well on them? I'm sorry. If they didn't sell well on the PS3, why the hell should they sell well on PS4? And besides, if the PS4 is such a radical departure as they say that it is, although I don't really see that happening in concept, if the PS4 is such a radical departure, why in the hell is everything getting licensed at the exact same time for PS3 and PS4 at the same time? To me, that doesn't make much sense. So why don't I just own a PS3 and call it a day? What's the compelling reason to buy a PS4 at that point? I can't think of one. DTX180 talked about, you know, the diminishing returns of backwards compatibility. This I thought was a fantastic idea. But I'll tell you this. I have already made an argument against that here in telling you that the PS4 is more attractive to me if I could play PS1 games on it natively. So I'm kind of already breaking that. But at the same time, Do I buy a... Sony started this beast when they made the PS2 backwards compatible to the PS1. They were the ones that really got this whole ball rolling for backwards compatibility, and now I think they're trying to stop that ball from rolling a little bit by charging you more for it, instead of making it something that was freely available. This, to me, is a great question. Are folks really that concerned with backwards compatibility? The Wii was an incredibly well-selling system, and I don't think that it had anything to do with the fact that you could play GameCube games natively on it. I think it's because the Wii U attracted an entirely new audience. It was a completely different set of experiences that people really connected to in ways that I'm not sure they're going to connect to anytime soon again. If you are the PS4 and you're trying to give people those kinds of experiences, then what in the living hell are you doing trying to keep your ties with the PS3? And in other words, maybe backwards compatibility, native backwards compatibility, not streaming, native backwards compatibility, maybe the diminishing returns are not worth it. Sony definitely made that decision with the PS3. Now, you know, there's some nature of like a backslap that came with you know, PS3 because the vulnerability of that allowed people to get access to run their unsigned code on the PS3 was through the backwards compatibility and other OS capability. So they disabled it almost like as a backhand to say, fine, you want to mess with us with that, we're going to disable it for you. You know, I'm still not sure that was going to get us very far. You know, I'm not sure that was going to be something that that really got us where we were trying to go. And so I think at the end of the day, I'm not sure that's all that important when we really come down to it. And moving on to Cobaltium's thought, which is that Cobaltium likes it when companies honor their old purchases, right? So, in other words, they give you something, or maybe not necessarily they give you something, but they show some kind of respect for the fact that you spent money with them before. I think one of the reasons that Mr. K talks about, you know, loss of respect for a lot of these companies and feel like there's, you know, kind of a disconnect between what they do and what service they provide. I know that was a couple folks out there were talking about it over the course of this week. You know, I understand why that's happening, because I think there is a disconnection in a lot of places between what... You know, when a company actually acknowledges, yes, you bought something, and really thank you for doing that, and we want to continue to reward you for doing so. It's not just, hey, we're going to continue to provide brand new experiences for you, which is what I think you find most video game, in terms of hardware companies saying now. Well, we're going to keep bringing out new stuff for you to buy. Well, good. I want to see that. I do want to see those things happen. But what I also want to do is I want some kind of homage, as it were, to some of the older things that I've already purchased from you guys and help make you who you are, right? So I think that goes along with the idea of when I bought my PS1 game, you know, I'm glad that you're, you know, maybe you're not going to make another Medieval, right? But if you're not going to make another Medieval, then allow me to play my Medieval game on my PS4. Why is that so hard to ask? And I think at the end of the day, that's not a difficult thing to accomplish, especially moving over to a kind of unified architecture now. Which we know now the PS4 will do with an x86 unified architecture. I think that trend will only continue because it's cheap and easy to produce for. But, why can't those things continue to happen? I would love to see those things happen, you know, moving into the future, where we could actually be able to have a little bit of respect shown to us by these companies for the fact that we spent money on their games at some point. And I think that's a big, big deal. All right, and then Askew Taboo talked about this idea. The music industry really kind of the music industry is almost wholeheartedly now embraced what they fought continuously at the inception, which is the idea of this digital revolution. People don't generally buy CDs anymore. Now they buy MP3s, or they buy, even if that's not your format of choice, the point is they buy a digital copy of something, right? And I'm going through it right now. There's a couple albums I actually really do want to get, and I'm thinking to myself, do I go and buy the CDs and then just rip them onto my hard drive to use them as MP3s? Or do I just accept it, embrace what's going on, get a Google Music account, well, I already have a Google Music account, or an Amazon MP3 account, and just go and get the songs that way? I'm having a really hard time with it. But the reason why I'm having a really hard time with it is exactly what Askew Taboo's point is. The music industry has embraced this wholeheartedly. The video game industry and other media companies are really having a hard time making that jump. And I think it's because, just like I'm having a hard time accepting the fact that I'm not getting a physical copy of something in the mail, or, you know, or when I bring it home from the store, I think the video game industry is, and a lot of other industries, media companies, are very, very hesitant to do that as well. Books, right, TV shows, all these other kinds of things, they're hesitant to kind of not give you something that you take home with you, because that's just the way we all know. And I think, you know, what Askew Taboo's point is that we're eventually going to have to get there. These media are going to have to accept the fact that their work is only going to be digital. It's not going to be physical. And I don't think there's any way to avoid that. It's just the way of things, and I think that's going to happen. The question at that point is going to be, can they accomplish it? Can they make that happen? And can they do it in a way that is trustworthy, that is worthwhile, that makes sense from a monetary financial perspective? And honestly, I'm not sure that's really going to happen, or that we could probably make that happen anytime soon. So it's we might be waiting a long time to see that happen. But I think Askew Taboo's point is very valid. It's coming. It's only a matter of whether we embrace it or walk away. So, all that said, and there were so many more comments out there that I could talk about this week. You guys brought up so many different, lines of thought here. I'll give you mine. First, I'll deal with streaming. I don't really care at this point about streaming games. I don't think it's really a good use of my time. You know what's really really cheap right now? Storage. Storage is really cheap. Go to Amazon and try to buy a hard drive right now that is, you know, larger than you ever thought you would have even 5 years ago. And see how cheap it is compared to what you bought 5 years ago, right? It's just unbelievable how cheap storage is these days. So if storage is so cheap, my thought is, and by the way, small form factors and everything. I just bought a brand new external drive. The thing was so cheap. It was like under $100, and the thing was like freaking huge. Why is it that we can't get those kinds of things in our game systems and use them? To me, that makes a lot more sense. I'm less concerned about being able to stream something from the cloud than I am to be able to actually, maybe taking that physical copy of the game home is not the way things are going to continue to be in the game industry. Okay, so, all right, I'll concede that fact. The physical days are numbered. But maybe a nice happy middle between streaming and having me bring something home would be just to be able to download the game, put it on my hard drive, and run it from the hard drive. That's the comfy middle for me. The new experience, and by the way, they already do that. Almost all of the video game companies already do that. Right? So why can't I just do it that way? That's a comfy medium for me. It's not streaming. It's not something that I own somewhere out in the cloud that then just gets processed somewhere, and then I just view it here so that they can do whatever the hell they want to it, like put ads in video games or whatever the hell else they want to do, right? Learn my history or listen to me interact with my Kinect or PS4 Kinect, whatever the hell they're going to call that. It doesn't do that. It's something I actually have tangibly on a hard drive that I'm storing somewhere. And that, to me, feels like it's not bringing that game home, but at the same time, I know I've got it, and it's tied to my account, and as long as my account doesn't get deleted or blown up or whatever the hell else, it should be okay to use. That, to me, is fine. So I think streaming is probably pretty immature at this point. I don't think that industry has been built up or is robust enough to probably make its way to consumer devices at this point. And I don't find myself any more likely to buy a PS4 because of the fact that it can stream games via Gaikai. Demos are a little bit of a different story. So one of the Gaikai claims to fame is that what you can do is, oh, you can just demo the game. Just download, you don't have to download really anything. You just kind of start that process of a simplistic download, and then you kind of start playing the game while it's still continuing to download for your streaming process. That's cool. I could dig that. The demo part of this whole thing I think is great. If I want to stream anything, it's just the demos. I don't want to gunk up my hard drive with demos. But at the end of the day, that's not even that big of a deal. Again, storage is cheap, folks. Why can't they just throw giant hard drives in these things and call it a day? I don't understand that. So that's streaming. In terms of native backwards compatibility, I think you guys know exactly where I'm going to go with this. I agree with all of you, right? Because I don't think anybody out there this week. And I'm not sure I necessarily predicted this, but I'm not surprised either. Folks, you guys don't like the idea of lacking backwards compatibility or substituting backwards compatibility with something like streaming. And you know what? I agree with that completely. I think we're all gamers at heart here. That's probably why we agree so strongly on this. But if we're talking about native backwards compatibility, I'm in the same boat as you guys. I would really like to see it. I'd like to see that a lot. Now, if a PS4 plays every PS3 game, every PS2 game, and every PS1 game natively, that does a lot for me, man. I like that a lot. My Xbox 360 can play a lot of games that the original Xbox could. It doesn't play all of them, which I think is a shortcoming, but it plays most of them. It really especially plays all the popular ones. If you put in a popular game, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be able to play it. Because the games that we all own and love are mostly the popular games anyway, so being able to play those on a 360, that's even a small consolation. Even that helps me understand. Even that helps me kind of get to where I need to be in order to make that happen. I like it, right? But I would really like to be able to kind of... You know what makes me brand loyal? Because if these guys are trying to build that brand loyalty. What makes me brand loyal is honoring that commitment that I've made to your system. So the fact that I have a regular Xbox, the fact that I have a 360, if Durango plays all of those, whatever they're going to call this damn thing, if it's going to play all of the original Xbox and the 360 games as well natively, then what in the hell would I have? Why would I buy a PS4? There makes no sense. It makes no sense for me to do that. If I have a library of these games, rather than say, okay, yeah, I have a library of these games and I can play them on these old consoles that are collecting dust, or I can just pop it into my new console and put the old ones up in the closet in a nice, temperate area where they can stay in good condition and I can sell them for a lot of money someday. That's what I'd like to be able to do. Why isn't that happening? Can somebody answer that for me? Because I don't get it. That, to me, inspires brand loyalty. That, to me, shows a commitment to the fact that you help support these people and get them where they are. That, to me, also shows a dedication to a brand and not just to a system, which is what the companies all these video game producers seem to be now. We are only beholden to the PS4. That's our focus. We don't give a crap about the PS3 or the PS2 or the PS1. Talk to me about what you did for me today or last week. Don't talk to me about what we did 6 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I don't like that idea. If you really want to kind of foster a true brand that you don't kill, you don't just kill it right out, then you want to pay homage to that brand and be able to go back and actually support some of the purchases that people have made with that brand before. Maybe I'm just rambling at this point, but I think that is very, very important. I would like to see those games come out. One other thing I'll talk about. Another reason why emulation kind of gets a bad rap is because most of the time when we're talking about emulation, we're talking about people that have to actually go back and get SDKs, right? Development kits for a particular system. They kind of reverse engineer them, and then they use some of that code, which is technically not legal. You can't do that, to go and play to emulate some of those old games. Completely understand why that should be illegal and why it should remain illegal. What I don't understand, although I think Gabe Newell makes an interesting argument for why that shouldn't be, but that's neither here nor there and another question for another time. But folks, the people that do have their SDKs, the only people in the world that don't need to license SDKs are the owners and the creators of those SDKs. So why in the hell could Sony not create a PS2 emulator for PS4 that worked perfectly, that worked flawlessly? To me, there seems to be no hurdles at that point. They were the ones that created the PS2. They were the ones that wrote all that code. They figured it out. So why can't I run that in your ecosystem? That, above all, makes no sense to me. I understand, folks, I understand completely about architectures. I get that the PS4 is going to be an x86 and the PS3 was a cell-based processor power PC. I understand that. But my point is, regardless of where, look at Good Old Games. Good Old Games plays a lot of games that had a lot of different platform restrictions, and they're gone now because someone took the time to go through and translate these games. And I realize that's x86, by and large, almost exclusively, as a matter of fact. But the point is, if someone had to go and emulating a piece of software to play natively, enabling a piece of hardware to play through emulation a piece of software, all right, is something that is only restrictive to the computational power and horsepower of a system, right? So you could make the argument that the PS4 couldn't emulate PS3 games with any kind of fidelity because of the lack of horsepower. That's a different story. I get that. I totally understand it. But folks, how could a PS4 not have the horsepower to be able to emulate PS1 games? I don't understand that. And if you as Sony invented the PS1 and you invented the PS4 and you're the one that holds on to those licenses, why in the smelly hell can you not play PS1 games on PS4? It's got an optical drive. Let's go. Anyway, I think we've rambled on about this enough, but it's a great conversation, guys. And I think that, let's talk about the answer to the question. I think none of us were really that impressed by the fact that any of this is going to be offered by the PS4, and I don't think any of us are any more likely to buy it as a result. Therefore, I think Sony's messaging is kind of flawed, and maybe their philosophy too. You could say that as well. I'm interested to see what happens. I'm going to be following it very closely, and of course, we'll be talking about that quite a bit on here on theclanofthegreywolf.com. Because, you know, we like to talk about these kinds of things. All right, so I want to get to a question for next week that I think you guys are really going to like. This was suggested by the Beer Ninja, a well-respected part of our community, who suggested I ask this question after seeing a post on it on another website, kind of asking a similar question, and I thought this was really good. For all of us out there that really love video games, one of the reasons we really like them, I think, is because we get involved in them. They kind of bring us in. They're immersive. Part of the reason that they're immersive is because they create very beautiful, interesting, fun, fantastical, whatever, worlds, right? Now, I talked to you guys before about, you know, your favorite video game worlds, and I've asked that question before. That was a good one. I really did enjoy that after I had played the original Assassin's Creed. But what I want to ask you guys has to do with those video game worlds again. And it's similar, but it is different. And I want you to think back to some of your favorite video games you've ever played, or some of your favorite video game worlds that really brought you in and made you a part of the game and the culture. The question for the Weekly Ringer for next week goes like this. What video game world was the hardest to say goodbye to? Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that, so when you play a game and you go through, so for example, I beat Skyrim a while back now, and I recently just picked it back up and started playing again. But, you know, the kind of big overarching goals are gone now. So everything I'm doing are kind of ancillary, they're side quests. I'm really just kind of going around discovering new places, stuff like that, which is awesome. Don't get me wrong, that's great. But not having that chief goal among everything else, now that you've beaten it, right? It's kind of time to move on to another game. The next game is kind of calling. I've given Skyrim its run. I really loved it. It was awesome. I had so much fun with it. Now I'm kind of like, what's next? What's on the docket? But there's something kind of aching there about leaving the Skyrim world because it's so much fun. It's, you know, hours and hours and hours of gameplay in it. So it's hard to leave it behind. I've created this whole, not only a world, but a world that I've created in part as well. It was created by Bethesda. I went in with my own characters and my own storyline, right? And helped to kind of create that world as well. And now that I want to move on to another game, it's kind of like, man, I don't want to leave Skyrim behind. Skyrim's great. It's fun. It's enjoyable. It's this whole world here, and it's kind of sad. You know, you start thinking about as if that place actually existed and I could actually go there, right? And so in asking you what your favorite video game worlds are, what I want, or not worlds are, but what is the hardest game world to leave behind? I want you to think about what your favorite game worlds are and talk about why, which one is the hardest to leave behind and why. Why is it so hard to leave behind? What is it specifically about that world that really entices you so that you don't want to put it out to pasture? Folks, if you have a question you'd like me to ask here in the Weekly Ringer, you can get that to me in several different ways. One, you can send it to me in an email. Or if you have comments of the show, you can do this the same way too. Commodore128@clanofthegreywolf.com. You can definitely do that. Send me a private message through the website, which you can find here on clanofthegreywolf.com as well. Or I'd like for you all to follow me on Twitter @itsthecommodore. One word. That is me. So I do make a lot of pithy comments there, and it's well worth your time. Come follow me on Twitter. All right, cool. So great. Folks, that is the Weekly Ringer for this week. I have had a good time talking about some of this backwards compatibility stuff. This is very exciting, okay? We're in a very exciting year for video gaming for a lot of reasons, chiefly among them the fact that these major console manufacturers are giving a last-ditch effort to show that they are still relevant in a console world, in a world that seems like it's saying console-less is the way to go. So we're in for a wild, wild ride. I hope you all enjoy it as much as we do. Thank you all for watching the Weekly Ringer. I am the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and there is no reset button.